Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Can we stop with all this sappy stuff? My skin's starting to crawl.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 8, 20 Years Ago Today. And now, here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello.
I realized kind of belatedly, as I IMG right before we started this, that as we're about to talk about the 20th wedding anniversary of Jim and Cindy Walsh this Monday, as this episode drops, is Dave's and my 18th wedding anniversary. So happy anniversary, Dave. I can't wait. I can't wait for you to give me a really ugly emerald pendant, just like Jim does, although I guess emerald is not your 18th anniversary gift. No comment from Dave.
No screechy David sound drop. I'm a little disappointed.
Sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, it's very weird to think. I mean, occasionally we do get reminders that like these characters now, the parents are basically our age. In fact, they might be a tiny bit younger at this point. But like, yeah, this is it's a tad sobering, and it's funny that I did not even think of it as
I got
I was
more hair than Jim
episode.
Still. So that there's something.
That's true.
That's why he still feels like he's like an adult where I am not. You know, hair loss really changes your perspective on things.
And mom jeans.
Yeah.
And mom jeans.
It
anyway.
Is interesting though. I wonder when like year wise that shift took place.
Yeah.
Where like. Because if you look at pictures of like, or at least when I look at pictures of my parents, like when I had just been born, and they were not particularly young when they had me, they were 30. So for that generation, you know, kind of old actually to start having kids. But then there's pictures of my grandmother, like when my grandmother was in her mid 40s, like my age, she already looked. I mean, and part of it is the styles of the time. Part of it is that her hair went white when she was like 41, but not, you know, like there was just this feeling that like age, your age meant that you were older, like, I don't know, psychologically than you were. Maybe it was being a parent that aged people. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there's something to the idea of like that when Generation X started going into the workforce, that sort of changed like how formal people were even about it. Like, when was the last time you ever worked anywhere that anyone wore a suit? I mean, not the three of us because we haven't worked in an office for a while, but like.
The guys that work at Men's Warehouse.
Well, they like the way they look and it shows. But I think that I feel like that's part of it, that like now there are people that are just wearing hoodies to work every day, like well into their 50s. So we open on shots of Jim and Cindy separately, except, of course, they are real candid shots of Carol Potter and James Eckhouse in their youth.
Carol Potter was so pretty.
So pretty. I mean, she's still pretty now at this point in the show.
She's still pretty. Just,
in fact,
you know,
she's still pretty like in the 2000s because she had a brief guest role on Greek on the ABC Family show. And she's still really looks good. But yeah, this is my favorite thing about the episode is like, because seeing people's real candid photos is like, to me, it's always kind of fun to see them at various points. And then you're like, oh, I guess James Eckhouse either grew up in or once visited Chicago because there's a Sears Tower behind him. But anyway, as I recall, this used to be scored to What the World Needs Now is Love. And Dave, I'm going to call for these out of order. Can you please play a little bit of clip number 3? All right, you get it. Everyone's heard that song. It's a little corny. It's kind of a corny song. It's a Burt Bacharach joint sung by Jackie DeShannon, of course. But it like that's the kind of song that, you know, you would imagine could be the wedding song of people who were married in 1973. Like, it's sweet. That's not what plays in the syndicated or DVD versions. Why don't we play a little bit of the fucking worst sub music maybe on the show ever? And that is clip number two.
Wow.
What the fuck?
Wow.
I don't even, like, it's so bad just on its own.
Yes.
Separate from its function.
Yes.
Like, you should write some, you know, Bacharach-y type of thing.
Yeah.
Or, like, get some trombones in there, maybe a sitar, because yeah. they met in the 60s.
Yeah.
Whatnot, but no. But even to play it over, like, whatever, interstitial shots over the credits of like people biking on the CU campus or whatever it is, like that is yeah. just such generic grungy god,
such a shitty,
and we're gonna hear
song.
That kind of Gennaro grunge so much in the next few seasons.
God, ooh. It's so true. That raises a question. I'm interested to know, like, when we get to the Peach Pit After Dark years, if they actually, like, how many of those artists actually signed deals that would allow their stuff to continue to be shown, because otherwise a lot of shit's gonna get cut out. Those were
well, and
bands.
Apparently you see it mentioned in passing in our comments threads on the forums that that Jamie Walters, like, random scenes will be cut out, and like they had to cut him singing Happy Birthday because duh, except now you could put it back in,
right,
because it went into the public domain finally. So I mean, not that I'm gonna, you know, really complain about missing the Ray Pruitt performances, but still.
Anyway, we digress because this episode's a little boring. Anyway, I'm actually offended by how shitty that music is. But anyway, as we already said, the candid shots of the real James Ackhouse's Carol Potter are adorable. However, the supposed Walsh wedding shot, which is actually kind of a plot point, is so bad. That wig they put on James Ackhouse. You can see it in the visual aids. Like, whoever, whatever photographer shot this, like, was wise enough to be like, no, back up. So, like, the top of his head is mostly in shadow. Still, oof. Anyway, when the montage ends, Cindy wakes up all amorous, and Jim pretends not to remember it's their anniversary. Hardy har. We get exposition to the effect that his mother is downstairs making both breakfast and noise, and more exposition to the effect that her parents are also coming. Cindy's, not Jim's mother's parents, are coming, and Brandon's getting them from the airport. Jim's gift for Cindy is a tacky emerald pendant of the yellowest yellow gold, which you can also see in the visual aids. However, she likes it, which I guess is what counts.
I would just like to mention before they open the box, my husband happened to be in my office and goes, "The claw," which is a reference to Toy Story and like the fact that Jim probably got this out of the like claw game. And then she opens the box and I was like, total claw.
Yeah. It looks like it's like a slightly nicer version of like the birthstone necklace that you would get as a like 7-year-old. Like, it's real tacky.
Yeah. That it's like next to the register at 7-Eleven.
Totally. Anyway, downstairs, Brenda has her ponytail under the hole in the back of her baseball cap just to troll me, I think, instead of through the hole. Maybe because her split ends wouldn't fit through said hole. And she comes into the kitchen to help the senior Mrs. Walsh with the dish that she just broke. What is this lady like? Let's find out in clip number four.
So how many people are coming to the party tonight?
I don't know, about 50 or so.
Then what does your mother need a caterer for? We could have handled that ourselves. I could have made my asparagus rolls, a few big turkeys.
Well, Grandma, I'm sure that Mom wanted you to be a guest, not the chef.
Well, your mother never did like my cooking.
Grandma.
Well, in my day, people didn't hire caterers.
Well, this is Beverly Hills, not Minnesota. And believe it or not, they even have caterers in Minnesota. As a matter of fact, Grandma Beavis uses one all the time.
I'm sure she does.
Grandma, be nice.
Well, you don't have to tell me that. I'm always nice.
You kids today and your fucking attitude towards caterers. You can kiss and lick my ass is what you do.
You're in a real mood today, Dave.
Shut up. I'm older.
First of all, Grandma Beavis. Is this the first that we've learned that Cindy's maiden name is Beavis? Because, whoa. horrible. Also, how many anniversary parties at someone's house have you been to where there are several turkeys? Such a random thing to say you were going to make. I don't know.
I know. I mean, if your anniversary is on Thanksgiving, maybe.
Sure. But yeah, like, what could be more convenient than a carving station in your backyard? Anyway, whatever.
And to make three of them in a single home. Yeah. Do you have a turkey pit in your backyard in Minnesota? Because
I don't know.
Last time I looked, well, you know what? Who cares?
Also, first, if
guys, considering... don't worry about it. They'll probably gobble it up.
Boo.
Oh my god. I was like, right, and oh.
Also, considering that this one is like based on her speech, supposed to be the homier one, like she is quite glam for a grandma. Her hair is like the orangest orange that ever oranged, and like her morning sweatshirt is rhinestone and stuff. Like she should be, you know, an old lady looking old lady, and she's totally not. Anyway. This is no June Squibb is my point. You can see her in the visual aids too. Not June Squibb. This grandma. Then Brandon is coming in with Cindy's parents. Shut up, Dave. Quit laughing at your stupid joke.
David!
David!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it is the past, Jim's mother greets Cindy's father with a handshake. Like these people are so cold to each other. They can't even hug. They're from Minnesota. She doesn't greet Cindy's mother at all. We learn that although Jim's father was either a rabble-rousing union man or a hard-ass hawk, depending on the episode, his widow is pure social climber and is super into the fact that Stuart is rich. And when Stuart arrives, we find out how good he is at kissing people's asses in clip number 5.
Ah, yes. Now I see where Brenda got her eyes and her smile and her cute little nose.
Oh, how sweet.
Well, you've been hit with the grandparents.
Stuart.
Ugh.
Moving on.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Dan smarmed on my mother like this. Totally worked.
I'm not saying it doesn't work. I'm just saying, bleh. Anyway, speaking of bleh, at the beach, Mel is a divorced Beverly Hills cliche in clip number 6.
Well, Jackie wouldn't trade weekends with me, so I've got Aaron, which would be fine, except that Nina's doing a photo shoot down in Cabo, and she's desperate for me to fly down and spend the weekend with her.
Well, why don't you take Aaron with you?
I love Aaron, but I could hardly spend a romantic weekend in Mexico with a crib in the room.
I get it.
I've got Aaron's regular babysitter all lined up. She'll handle everything. All you have to do is just sleep at my place for the weekend.
I don't know, Dad. You sure about this?
David, please. I just feel more secure knowing that you were there.
Why? What evidence do we have other than David giving her a bottle one time that David knows what he's doing? Like, I don't understand why that's supposed to be helpful.
Does she need instruction in pitching a bitch face? Because that's all he's basically good for at this point in the series.
So
many.
Yeah.
B, if you're that neurotic about whether the regular babysitter can handle it, given that she's, you know, a babysitter, mm-hmm. why don't you stay home?
Yeah.
And let your half-your-age model girlfriend do whatever she's going to do in Cabo, mm-hmm. Dad.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, unspoken in this is like, I don't trust Nina to go to Cabo because I think she's going to fuck the photographer. I feel like, if she's working, why is she, quote, desperate, unquote, for you to come? Mel sucks. It's really a shame what happened to Mel. He used to be kind of cool in season 3 when they were like, he and Jackie were first getting together, or season 2. Then he's really fallen off a cliff. However, Aaron should maybe consider spending the weekend with her occupational therapist, judging by clip number 7.
Aaron, Oh my god.
I can't believe not only is it the second week in a row that we are making fun of this child, but it's actually not me who started it this time. Yay!
Was that supposed to be it? Hang on.
Aaron, okay.
He says, are you reading with your brother or something? And then I think some of that was reading. I mean, she's supposed to be over 1, but I don't know. I feel like don't have her speak at all. That's just embarrassing. Whatever.
Wait, okay. Oh, my God.
That's pretty harsh, but okay.
Well, I mean, for for show purposes, don't make us listen to it. The babble.
Again with this, the official child-free by everyone's choice podcast of Beverly Hills 90210. We are terrible people.
Anyway.
Speaking of terrible people.
Thank Brandon. You. Perfect transition. At school, Brandon is sick of waiting for Deshaun to be ready for tutoring. Deshaun sends Brandon to the gym while he finishes up. So Brandon is there pressing tiny weights when he sees a pretty lady on the Stairmaster. Soon we learn that she is good at flirting as she asks Brand to spot her in clip number 8.
Oh, girl can pump some iron.
I try.
So how long you been doing this?
A couple years. Not recently, though. I've been traveling places they don't exactly have a gym on every corner.
Oh, yeah? Where's that?
Central America. I'm a cultural anthropologist.
So you're a professor here?
Yeah, I wish. No, I'm an ABD.
ABD?
Yeah, stands for all but dissertation. I'll be lucky if I get my doctorate sometime before the end of the millennium.
And here I thought you were an undergrad.
Oh, thanks for the compliment. Yeah, that's it for me.
Good set.
So, what's your name?
Brandon Walsh.
Lucinda Nicholson.
Hi.
Listen, do you want to get a cup of coffee or something?
I'd love to, but I gotta meet someone.
Your girlfriend?
No, actually, just this kid that I'm tutoring.
Oh. So does that mean you're as smart as you are good looking?
Smarter, actually.
Right.
Listen, this may be kind of forward, but could I call you sometime?
No, I don't think so. But I'm here every morning at 7.
See.
That music is because they haven't settled on the love theme of Lucinda Nicholson, but we'll be hearing a lot of it in the next episode.
Vaguely
Peruvian. Yeah, she starts off kind of barfulous in this one, but I also love that Brandon doesn't think anything amiss about her being like, I totally want to flirt with you, but don't call me. Like, get a hint, Brandon. God.
Yeah, especially given, well, whatever, we'll get to it. But whatever, like, her flirting is not exactly subtle, but no. He is here for it. Like, you can hear the ions reversing in his penis as his boner, like, wangs upright.
That's what I'm saying. She's good at flirting.
Yeah, good enough.
She knows what she's doing. Speaking of knowing what she's doing, except the opposite of that. Then we're with Dylan in a part of town where people of color stand outside convenience stores, if you can imagine that. Some sketcho comes out of... Bless you.
Excuse me.
Comes out of the convenience store, and at first I thought he was eating yogurt, and so did Sarah, but when we went and looked again, he was actually eating, like, a pint of Haagen-Dazs that he had just bought. What? Anyway, he takes Dylan to an alley or something to buy a gun from the back of his van. It's so easy how this transaction goes down that even now, knowing how it ends, I was waiting for this to end up being a total sting and the guy's a cop, but he's not. And Dylan buys the tiny little girl gun he had tried to buy
in the last episode.
It's so small. Anyway, I mean, not that that should make a difference. Don't buy guns illegally, and really, don't buy guns at all if you're just a guy. But
if you're going to be all Annie Oakley drama queen about buying a gun illegally, get a fucking 44 Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
Like, rock it. Yes. Get a real gun.
Don't get this little piece of shit that Brenda had, like, stuffed in her garter at that Halloween episode.
Yeah, I think it's the same gun.
I think
they're just like, shit, we actually need a real gun. Okay, let's just use that one.
Yeah. This one still has lipstick on. It doesn't matter. Anyway, John then finds Kelly on the lawn at school and makes her an extremely resistible offer in clip number 9.
Well, one of my frat brothers has given me 2 front row tickets to the Steely Dan concert tonight at the Forum. And there's no one I'd rather ask than you.
Really? Are you sure you wouldn't rather ask your dad to the Steely Dan show?
Wow.
Even back then.
It's 1993.
Yeah, that's no. Like, sorry, I have plans to go see Chicago tonight.
Yes, I mean, honestly, like, you're not gonna go to the show. Just say it's someone else. Say it's U2 or something. It's 1993. Anyway, John is snotty, guessing that Dylan is having another crisis, but Kelly tells him that she's actually going to a party, and he tries to mooch his way in as her date, but it's a no-go, as we hear in clip number 10.
Yeah, it's not that kind of party. Brenda and Brandon Walsh's parents are celebrating their 20th anniversary.
Okay, so I'll go with you.
I can't take you to the Walsh's party.
Why not? I have a nice suit. I'll take a shower. Kelly, I won't embarrass you.
It's not that. Dylan's gonna be there.
So I'm not planning to dance with Dylan.
You know what I'm saying. I just don't think it's the right place for us to make our first appearance.
So you're saying eventually we will make an appearance together?
I don't know what I'm saying.
Okay. Then I'll say it. I'm crazy about you, Kelly. I can't eat, I can't sleep, I definitely can't study. All I do is think about you. You feel it too. I know you do.
Digging into your leg.
Yes, I feel it.
Then give in to me.
I can't. At least not tonight.
Okay. I told you before, I can wait. Because you're worth waiting for.
Okay, before we get into this, he then caps this speech with a fucking forehead kiss. What is with the guys on this show and the forehead kisses? They need to stop it. However, it did make
What is with the fucking school break special xylophone is what I would like to know. It's not romantic.
No, it's not. But I also, like, I also don't, I mean, I know for contrivance purposes why all the kids are going, but, like, would you have gone to your parents' friends' anniversary party? Like, I don't know why they're all invited other than that they have to be there because of future events, but it just seems weird.
Yeah, especially, well, whatever, it's Jackie and Mel's wedding all over again, like, why?
True. Then we fucking watch Dylan clean his gun for 20 minutes and load it, shoot a comically tight grouping on a gun range target, as if, please see the gif for how ridiculous it is, like,
especially not after the quote-unquote form he demonstrated last week in his Oklahoma tryout.
Okay, then we have to get into this whole thing with the fucking present that Brandon and Brenda got for their parents, and I have 1,000 questions about it. But first of all, starting with, why is it at school? This is what the next scene, we see Brandon walking through the quad with it, and it's big and framed, and it's the present. Why was it at school? We never find out. Whatever. He runs into Andrea. We can say that Gabrielle Carteris is officially maybe starting to show in these shorter roles, or else they're just very unflattering. Please go to the visual aids and see. Make the judgment for yourself. Find out Andrea is bringing Dan to this party. And the two most important men in her life / the world meet for the first time in clip 11.
Dan, come here. Come here. Dan, mm-hmm. This is Brandon Walsh.
How you doing, man?
Hey, well, where's your halo?
Excuse me?
Dear Andrea, talk about you. You're one step from sainthood.
What kind of lies you've been telling, huh?
I said nothing of the sort.
Yeah, well, I've heard a lot about you, too, man.
Well, we can compare notes tonight.
Maybe I should just skip this party.
No
way. Just gotta accept the fact that we're gonna tease you all night.
Mercilessly.
Maybe you don't call your boyfriend over who looks 15 years younger than you like he's a child in your charge and or a dog. Come here, Dan. Come here, Dan. Come here, Dan. Dan, what's walkies?
The work that Matthew Peretta does in this role, considering how completely thankless it is, like, he really deserves a Nobel Peace Prize for having
to act. He really does.
Like, he thought Andrea was the shit, because, oh, God. Anyway, then Brandon spots Lucinda, and more flirting ensues in clip 12.
You want a cup of coffee?
Line's too long.
Oh, here, share mine.
Thanks.
It's a styrofoam cup. Sweet. That he drinks from.
You don't like it that way?
To tell you the truth, I don't like it anyway. I don't drink much coffee unless I really need to stay awake.
You're just a kid, aren't you?
Just because I don't drink coffee? What's the matter? You didn't read Diet for a New America?
Okay. I can take it. Tell me, how old are you?
18.
18. Gosh, I was 18 once too.
Come on, you make it sound like you're ancient. How old are you?
I'm 27.
27's not old.
No, it's not. Except when you're flirting with an 18-year-old.
Is that what you're doing?
Maybe.
And now there's a tuba. What the fuck?
I'm gonna give Dina Meyer a compliment that's only gonna sound like a compliment to you, Sarah D. Bunting, but she has a real Anne Heche quality in this role, and I love, I know she's bonkers, but I think Anne Heche is like a really good natural actor, and I find that Dina Meyer is in this role. Like when she, the way she, her take on,
oh,
like,
is this the lady from Starship Troopers?
Yes.
Ah.
This is Dizzy Flores from Starship Troopers.
And Birds of Prey.
Yes, and Birds of Prey.
Iva Cachran. We see you.
The way she does the laugh when she's like, okay, tell it to me straight. How old are you? Like, just seems, she's very unactory, and I appreciate that about this performance.
Yes. Lucinda herself is like, she's hard to defend because she is going after Brandon and then goes after Dylan.
Yes.
And his money for her anthropologing.
Yep.
Or whatever. But yeah, like she's much more likable than I remembered. And especially in an upcoming scene where Brandon is Brandoning and she's just like, whatever. And I was like, oh yeah, Lucinda 2016. So yeah.
But that's not in this episode. This one, she's still kind of an asshole. But this is as much as we see of her this week. And then Dylan is cleaning his gun at home. And I'm starting to think he bought this thing because he has OCD and needed something to do with his hands all the time. Anyway, Brandon comes to the door. Dylan hides the gun barely under a section of newspaper. Still the gun oil totally out on the table when when Brandon walks in. So he's lucky that Brandon is so self-involved he doesn't notice. Anyway, Brandon is, again, this is my latest problem with this present. He's leaving it at Dylan's. Why? Like, if the story was, I'm going to leave it at your house, bring it when you come to the party, okay. But, like, does he think that his parents can't be trusted to see a large brown wrapped paper package in their house at the day of their anniversary party and not open it until it's given to them? Like, the contrivance that gets him back to the house later is so stupid. So stupid.
Yeah. And then, we'll get to how stupid the contrivance is, like, while it's happening, when we get to that scene.
We will. Also, this is the gift, clip 13.
We had their wedding picture turned into a giant jigsaw puzzle. If they take it apart, it'll take them a lifetime of marriage to put it back together.
Now I have this problem with the present. Okay, this is obviously around the time that, like, such technology was first available to, like, the consumer in non-artisanal ways. But right. They're giving this portrait to their parents. It's the puzzle already put together in a frame. Like, is the idea that they're supposed to take it apart and do it like it would be a fun activity because they like puzzles, which, okay. But if that's the case, why give it to them in a frame? Just give them the portrait, like a nice version of the portrait.
Also, it's an early grade school level
puzzle. That was going to be my next
question. It's not a 1,000-piecer. It's like those big chunky pieces. Like,
yeah, and it's not, as we will find later. Well, I'll get to my problem with how it's cut later. This is how many problems I have with this stupid present. Anyway, Brandon leaves. Dylan immediately gets the gun out again. Hey, I wonder how I'm supposed to feel about that. Clip 14. I have that in our doc where we put all the clips as gun unhiding music.
I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yes. God, the show. Anyway, at the beach, David is pointlessly horny, the only kind of way he ever is horny, at Donna's question about which dress to wear. You can see them both in visual aids. One of her options is this, like, shift dress covered in tomatoes, which, cute. Is it a party dress? No. Sarah, you're a tomato enthusiast. Would you wear that dress?
Yes. I had that dress with oranges.
Aw, cute.
I wore it to a frat party.
To a frat party. Exactly.
It looked great on his floor.
Oh, oh shit. And then Mel sucks some more. He needs David to go to his apartment and wait for the babysitter to get there, because of course he does. Getting ready for the party, Brenda and Brandon discuss their parents' mind-blowing fidelity to one another, and things get barfy fast in clip 15.
I mean, how did they do it? How did our parents stay married for 20 years?
More importantly, how'd they stay happily married for 20 years?
They are happy, aren't they?
Well, they sure seem it, and I don't think it's an act.
Yeah, but how do they keep it alive?
They still lock their bedroom door every Sunday night.
Yeah, it's your parents.
What do you think of Stuart?
I hardly know him.
Well, maybe he's the one.
Bren, you've only known the guy 2 weeks. Slow down a little, will you? I mean, Stuart may be the one. Stuart may not be the one. You may not meet the one until the year 2000, but you got a lot of time. You'll find it.
Yeah, well, life will be awfully lonely if I don't. What about you?
Hey, don't look at me. The only relationship I've ever had last longer than a month was with that psychopath Emily Valentine. I'm a long way from finding it.
Well, you will.
Maybe referring to an ex who had actual mental problems as a psychopath is part of the reason why you haven't been able to keep something going longer than that, Brandon.
Yeah, why don't you pick out a nice young lady of color and fix racism again? Then maybe you can get into a relationship. Or get with Josh Ridgeland. You know he wants you.
So bad. Then we find out why Brandon had to drop off the present at Dylan's so that they could be drama about it not being at home to give to Jim and Cindy before the party, which, by the way, that scene never happens either. Another problem I have with the stupid present. Brandon takes off to retrieve it. Meanwhile, Jim tells his mother that the caterer's cooking isn't as good as hers, and she's grateful, even though it seems like she knows it's bullshit, and there's some blah blah about his dead dad. No one cares. Then she gives him her and his dad's rings. She says maybe one of his kids will be getting married soon and he can pass them down. Jim obviously hopes not, but foreshadowing. In his stupid car, Brandon screams through the streets to Dylan's, gets out of his car like an asshole. Again, I made a gif, you can see in the visual aids, just open the door. It's more effort to climb over it. I know it's a convertible. Stop being such a shithead. He pounds on the door at Dylan's, but he gets no answer because Dylan's in the shower. Brandon runs around to the back, but the door is locked. Then Dylan sort of hears something while he's shaving. And then Brandon, like a fucking idiot, decides that immediately getting his parents' stupid present they're not even gonna like is so important that instead of just calling Dylan and asking him to bring it, he'll go ahead, take a wrench out of Dylan's toolkit, and smash the glass in the back door. Dylan is obviously scared, but he's also super psyched to have a reason to use his new toy, and he comes out still in his towel to see a hand fiddling with the lock. And I made a gif, he is vibrating with adrenaline as the hand successfully unlocks the door, and then, clip 16.
I got a gun, man! Don't hit him out! Don't shoot, it's me, Brandon!
Oh, God.
God, man, what are you doing here? What am I doing here? What are you doing with a gun? I'm protecting my home. What, you never heard of a doorbell?
Yes, I've heard of a doorbell. I rang the doorbell. There was no answer. I had to get my parents' present. I didn't see your car. I came in.
My car's in the garage. I was in the shower. I almost shot you.
No kidding, you almost shot me. You ever hear of an alarm system? It might be safer for you.
Hey, somebody ever comes up and sticks a gun through the window of your car in the middle of the night, then you can tell me about it.
Listen. I know they stole your car. I know it was scary. I know your dad got blown away, but this isn't the answer, man. You're gonna kill somebody. You almost killed me.
So close.
I'm sorry.
That I missed.
I don't know. I'm out of it, man. I don't know what I'm doing here.
Just do me a favor, will you, pal? You get rid of this thing? Stop playing cowboys and Indians?
Yeah. I will. I just got one problem.
What's that?
How you get rid of a gun?
You throw it off a pier.
What?
Take a ride tomorrow?
Sure. But tonight, we got a party to go to.
All better.
I know.
And we never saw it again.
We never saw it again. We don't even get a scene of him throwing it off a pier. Like, and also, Brandon was a little quick with that answer, I feel. Yeah, that was a lot of bullshit, but at least it's the end of the gun storyline. Thank God. Back at the Walsh house, Brenda is in the absolute wrong color for her, and her eyebrows are crazier than ever, and her necklace doesn't go. You can see all of this in the visual aids. Then downstairs, Andrea introduces Dan to Steve and Celeste, and shit gets awkward immediately in clip 17.
I can't believe it. The Walshes have been married for 20 years. Think about it. 20 years. It's got to be some kind of Beverly Hills record.
It's romantic.
If you believe in marriage.
What, you don't?
Ask me in about 5 years.
Nice meeting you.
Steve's response and its quickness are perfect. Like, oh, you're that guy. Bye. Like,
yeah, really?
It's an anniversary. Shut up, Dan. Exactly. Like, have whatever opinion you want about marriage. I'm sure no one cares, including the Walshes, but like, you don't have to say it at the party where you're about to drink their free booze. Like, shut up.
And then there has to be the obligatory shot of Andrea's face falling from like 15 stories up. In a silent movie. Like, oh my God. Act like you've been here.
You've had sex, like, what, by this point, maybe 4 times? Like, if he doesn't believe in marriage, I doubt it affects you either way, now or in 5 years. So simmer down.
Yeah, you'll be dead by then anyway, Nana. Don't worry about it.
I was going to say, your biological clock is ticking, I realize, but... Anyway, outside at the door, Dylan is flirting with Kelly. She makes a joke about him giving the Walshes a gun, but he tells her he's done with guns and she was right. Then they walk in and see the stupid puzzle, and I've already said too much about it, but I hate it. Anyway, then David and Donna walk in with a plus one, as we hear in clip 18.
Aaron, what's Aaron doing here?
Aaron is here?
Mel had some babysitter problems.
Of course he did. Come here, sweetie. Mommy's gonna take you to a party.
No.
Yes, yes.
No.
Yes,
yes. No.
Aaron really doesn't want to go to this party, and I frankly don't blame her.
Yeah. Although Aaron looks legit adorable. There's a pic in the visual aids of her, like, when they're at the buffet, and she's giving someone, like, the whatever, just baby stink eye, and it's really cute.
She is very cute.
I apologize, little actress playing Aaron. She turned out beautiful and nice acting, even if it was an accident. But I would also like to note, given the flap doodle that Aaron's presence ends up causing that lasts like an episode and a half, that when Jackie picks her up, there is no mention made of the fact that she is, quote, burning up. So, whatever.
Good point. I didn't even think of that. You are right. Then Dylan is mopily watching Brenda dancing with Stuart, and what do you know? He and Stuart have a history, as we hear in clip 19.
Well, looks like Brenda finally found someone to keep up with her on the dance floor. Stuart, a real mover, shaker. Always has been.
How do you know him anyway, man? You go to West Beverly?
Nah, just from the scene.
Ugh. What scene is that?
You don't want to know. So they serious?
Yes, we do!
Well, yeah. They seem to spend a lot of time together.
I keep my eye on him, bro. Wouldn't want him dating my sister.
This is like such textbook TV trope writing. Like, no one, in no actual conversation would that be the end of it. Like, what do you mean? Like, Brandon would obviously have follow-up questions, but that's not how the scene goes.
Yeah. And this is classic. It's classic Dylan. He always is cagey about this stuff. Like, unless the scene was hardcore BDSM, no one cares. And even then, the internet has been born. No one cares. Get over yourself. Like, no, the scene. You know, two girls, one Stuart. Like, settle down. Dangerous to know.
Oh, God. You're so right. Anyway, then on the dance floor, Stuart gets real. Weird. In clip 19. Sorry, 20. 20. Sorry.
Look at your parents. They really love each other, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
You know, whenever I'm over here, I feel like this is a real home, a real family. Not like the show my parents put on.
Well, your parents seem like they're pretty happy.
It's a business arrangement. They gave up on romance a long time ago.
That's too bad.
I believe in love.
Me too.
God, you're so so real. Shut up, poor little God. Rich boy.
This is also one of many scenes, and you will see this in our visual aids, where this actor looks...
His name is David Gale.
Yes. Like... that they can take care of each other. There's some unfortunate face acting, and also the gap between his two front teeth in this case is really not helping with the overall impression that perhaps Stewart's IQ is not the, you know, triple digits it might be.
Well, that his infamous one season or one semester at Pepperdine was not at by his choice, and perhaps that he got in as a favor. And then Stewart tells Brenda he's going to make the first toast to these people that he barely knows, which is weird and all about him and gross. But when he gets the mic, even though Brenda was not psyched about him doing it, she is proud of his toast, which is somehow both weird and banal at the same time. I didn't clip it for that reason. Jim's mother is totally wet for Stewart. Cindy's mom thinks Brenda is too young to think about marriage. And Cindy and Jim agree that she needs to finish college first. But Stewart has other ideas. He has to speak to Brenda in private and proceeds to embarrass himself and all of us, including
Brenda, I've never met anyone like you. You make me happier than I have ever been in my life. And somehow I thought tonight might be a good time to give you this.
Ring, Glint.
Stuart.
I know this may seem fast, but I want to marry you, Brenda.
I don't know what to say.
Say you'll take him to a neurologist.
Will you marry me?
We've only known each other for 2 weeks.
2 weeks!
Will you marry me?
Yes.
Yes.
2 weeks they've known each other. I had in my notes earlier, these people he's only known 3 weeks, referring to Jim and Cindy about the toast, but like 2 weeks, Jesus Christ, Stewart, do you know how to pick him? Way to find someone as fucking dramatic and weird as you that would accept this crazy proposal.
Yeah. I mean, and the ring...
It's so ostentatious. It is a fucking door knocker.
Yeah, it is. It looks uncomfortable to wear.
Yes, it does. It's like wider than her finger, the rock. Anyway, this is ridiculous, but we will have plenty more time to dig into it. So instead, let's go up to where Andrea finds Kelly fixing her makeup in Brenda's room. A cringy conversation ensues in clip 22.
So I like Dan. He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah, I guess he is.
I thought you really liked him.
I thought so, too.
What's the matter?
I slept with him, Kel. And the first time was nothing like I thought it would be.
Well, life never is.
I mean, you wouldn't think that I'd be the kind of girl to be so impulsive, would you?
Andrea, sometimes you're not supposed to think things through so much. You just have to follow your heart.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I thought I might be in love with him, but I don't know. I mean, he's more cerebral than I am. He doesn't have a romantic bone in his body. And tonight, when I saw the Walshes together, I don't know, it just hit me. I mean, maybe he's the wrong guy for me. How long is it supposed to take before I feel the earth move?
Just give it some time.
What, practice makes perfect?
Maybe.
I don't know. I think if you don't have sparks in the beginning of a relationship, maybe there never will be any.
Well, you never know. You look at Dylan and me. We have all the sparks in the world, and we still can't make it work.
That is not accurate. You have none of the sparks in any world. That's
well, there are sparks of loathing.
That's true.
Hate sparks.
True. But let's back up to Andrea's whole thing. First of all, what is impulsive about sleeping with a guy when you have your own room in a dorm and you're a freshman in college and you're 18? Nothing. That's
and you
normal.
Bored us to death talking about it for half an episode. Like, whatever.
Yeah. That nothing about that was impulsive. That was just normal. Then she's like, I don't think I'm in love with him, which, like, who cares? You barely know him. It doesn't really matter. You don't have to be in love. But also, like, this is her problem. Like, now that she thinks he doesn't want to get married, she thinks she's not in love with him. Like, I don't understand. What would actually happen in this relationship if they were real people is that she would cling on to him for dear life. Like, he's her first serious anything. She would be all about it. Like, if she didn't sleep with Jordan, she would be, I feel like, really, really attached to Dan in, like, probably an unhealthy way if this were real.
Well, yeah. Also, like, I don't know. It was nothing like I thought it would be.
Right. Is she saying it was bad? Like, is that
okay,
what that whole,
like,
earth move thing is
about?
Here are
some secrets that are not secrets. Mm-hmm. Pregnancy, yeah. Difficult, and a scam.
Mm-hmm.
First time having sex usually sucks. Yeah. Like, who doesn't know that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that it always has to be true.
Right.
But it's like, so wait. It was fine that he wasn't giving you an orgasm before he announced that he was one of those, I'm never getting married, it's just a piece of paper, it goes.
Right.
But now that he's announced that,
retroactively, it wasn't
you
any
refused
good?
To you refuse to settle for non-earthquake sex, and instead you're going to try to find love with
I'll say this about Dan, though. Like, we're about to find out that he's a male feminist. Like, he's one of those. I really doubt that he did not give it his all in terms of, like, making sure that Andrea got there. Just saying.
Oh, I'm sure he gave it his all, but Andrea is clenched.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Tight.
Good point. That there was nothing that he could do and she's the problem. I would accept that possibility. Oh my God, we're discussing this so much. It's so terrible. I apologize to everyone who's still listening.
And I will just reiterate our, like, blanket disclaimer that, like, this is not Gabrielle Carteris' fault.
No,
exactly.
It's not. Exactly. Anyway, let's go back downstairs. That's enough of this. Jackie takes Aaron from David and thinks she may have a fever in clip 23.
No, you know, she felt warm to me when you first got here, but look, her face is flushed. Did Mel say anything to you?
It isn't. No.
Well, where is he? What's his number? He did leave a number, didn't he?
Of course he did.
It's just... What?
He's in Mexico.
What?
Jackie, don't get all excited.
I will get as excited as I damn well please. Right now, I am going to take my daughter home. You tell your father he'll be hearing from my lawyer.
I don't know anything about how custody works, thank God, but I feel like this is probably a huge no-no that you're not allowed to leave the country without your child, or with your child for that matter, when it's your, like, your joint custodial weekend, probably.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it is.
So go Jackie, like, fuck off, Mel. You're a fucking cliche. You're embarrassing everybody. Moving on. Stuart wants to tell Jim and Cindy about the engagement. They are, of course, horrified, even more so when Stuart says he has to make the announcement tonight because he has no class and doesn't realize this would kind of steal the guests of honor's thunder.
Yeah, this is the worst.
It's terrible.
This is the worst part of this whole thing, is that he's like, well, let me just get on the mic and announce it. Like, it's right. Not your fucking party.
No. Also, Brenda should be talking him out of it if he can't get there himself. Like, Jesus Christ. But that's when Grandma Walsh comes over and starts cavelling about Brenda's huge ring and says she wants to make the announcement herself. And that scans because she hates Cindy, apparently. Cindy tries to stop it from happening, but it's too late. Brenda's friends, of course, are shocked. The girls all swarm to her to look at the ring, and fucking Jim has to involve Brenda's other dad in clip 24.
Brandon, did you know anything about this?
Not a thing.
Has your sister lost her mind?
I don't know, Mom. She's pulled some doozies in the past, but this one certainly takes the cake, doesn't it?
I would say no one asked you, but Jim asked him. Like, don't ask him. No one needs his opinion on anything.
Yeah, and Brandon, like, Brandon's tone is correct. Brandon's sort of like, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
must be Wednesday. Brenda's acting up again. Mm. But I mean, it's true. Unfortunately, it's just annoying that that's Brandon saying so.
It is the worst when he's right. God. Brenda insists to the girls that she's sure this engagement is the right thing. They all pretend to be happy for her. And then former co-poonhounds or drug buddies or whatever the fuck Stuart and Dylan were.
Cleveland Steamer Society.
Getting to know Gainesvillers run into each other in clip 25.
Hey Dylan, how's it going?
Stuart, so you do remember me.
Of course, man. It's been a long time.
Long enough, I hope.
What?
What does that mean?
It means I hope you cleaned up your act.
I have. Why is that any of your business?
Well, it's Brenda. She's very important to me. I just want to make sure you know that if you ever hurt her in any way, you'll have to answer to me.
Okay. David Gale is not as big as Paul Johansson, but he's still twice the size of Luke Perry. Yeah. So this is another one of those situations where it's like, okay, whatever. It's
just, yeah, now that you've thrown your girl gun off a pier, I really don't see why you should be that worried about it.
And he's not.
Dirty Sanchez. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. Dylan. Then Dan sends Andrea to go to the bar to get them some champagne. And when she gets there, this happens. Clip 26.
Do you have some ID?
There's a senior discount.
Oh, hilarious. But it's
let
just...
the record show. I am a hideous old hag. Still. Do not set us up like that, not to a writer's.
Honestly, it's just mean. You have to think that even in the scene, she was like, really?
Oh.
But it's just a hilarious joke that he should feel totally free to make it to a guest at a party he's being paid to serve at, by the way. Like, come on, dude. You're as bad as the guy that tried to card the co-owner of the restaurant when Stuart took Brenda on their first date. Whatever. I guess we're supposed to think this is super hot chemistry in clip 27.
Looks like a great party. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents got engaged at my grandparents' 20th anniversary. Mark Sophie, tell me.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe that's what makes me such a sucker for romance. I guess it's genetic. Cried everything, weddings, christenings, even television commercials.
So do I.
Bar mitzvahs, 4th of July. You've got a great smile. It lights up your whole face.
Thank you. What's your name?
Jesse.
Hi, I'm Andrea.
It's a beautiful name for a beautiful girl.
Try again.
At least he doesn't compliment her eyes, which, again, he does in a later episode. And, like, she's not unattractive, but that's not her best feature. She does have a pretty smile. Anyway, so mean.
And also, not for nothing, mm-hmm. but you're the bartender.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Shutty. No one asked for your life story. Like, just give her the drink. Shut up.
And even Andrea's like, where are you going with this? Like, just fork over. And then he hands over this punch cup. It's tiny. It's filled like two-thirds full. Like... Well, I could have drunk that and got another one while you were blathering on about how you fry at McDonald's commercials.
Yes, again, like, Jughead. This is a tip business. Like, do your job, God. Anyway.
Here's a tip for you. Shut up, A. B, no one's buying it.
Oh, C, don't ask Nana for ID, unless you think it's going to make her remember when she was young. 40 years ago, whatever. Then Stuart and Brenda are dancing, and please go to the visual aids to see this, because either he is in a trench or she is on a box or both, because they're somehow both in the frame, even though she comes up to like his nipples. They flirt about whether she's going to take his name, which she should, because at least she can pronounce it, unlike Wash. Brandon cuts in to ask if she knows what she's doing. She promises she's not going to do something she regrets. After the party, Jim and Cindy stagger to the couch, too tired even to yell at Brenda about her stupid engagement. And then Brandon takes one piece out of the portrait puzzle And it all falls apart because it's not even cut properly. You thought I was done complaining about the present. I'm not. You know, jigsaw puzzle has like little notches so they fit together. This is Sarah's point. The pieces are not only giant, they're like just barely cut, like you would cut a piece of pineapple. Like they're just sort of fit together. There's no way this is a good puzzle. I hate this present so much. I hate it! Speaking of hate, the terrible sub music that plays us out in clip 28.
Remember when we first heard this song?
No, it's I'll not a song!
Do you want to dance?
I'd love to.
No!
So, what are we going to do about Brenda?
Well, as Scarlett O'Hara said, we'll think about it tomorrow.
Yes, I do. I mean, like, at least, why didn't they play that terrible sub music at the beginning? Like, at least it seems like something people in their 40s in the 90s would have listened to, as opposed to that shitty grunge crap.
Like, I just...
It's not supposed to be this. What the world needs now, again, it could just use the same song both times, even if they're both crappy. God!
Well, and I don't know. Good luck to this phony Bennett, who... It reminded me of when I lived in Bensonhurst. I lived down the street from the Silhouette Lounge.
Oh, awesome.
Which had karaoke with a live drummer once a week, which we called Mafia Karaoke because that's totally what it was. And there was a guy who used to like sing Frank Sinatra and change the lyrics. And he insulted a hat that my mother had made for me. And so I had to get up and also sing Frank Sinatra. And then I changed the lyrics. And my dead boyfriend was like, oh, my God, we are going to be killed and no one will know for years. And I was like, I don't think so. I think they're laughing. And they were laughing, but we never went back there again because I didn't want to die.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy who would sing Tony Bennett like for hours and was actually really good. And he wasn't there that night, which is how this whole contretemps started. So,
oh, I see.
But yes, phony Bennett. Like, why didn't you just use that to start with?
Yeah, it would have made sense. It would have made more. It would still been crappy, but it would have made more sense than that shit we heard at the beginning. Speaking of the beginning, this is the end. So let's wrap it up with our episode MVP. Aaron, who didn't want to go to the party and was right.
I'm going to say Donna.
Yeah.
Because the dress she chose was actually cute.
It is, and appropriate.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And, she was barely in it. So, yeah, Donna.
Good call. Least valuable.
Player.
Dylan for almost shooting Brandon, but not shooting Brandon.
And also for that present.
Oh, God. Fucking present.
And for not being able to close the deal with Lucinda. Get a grip.
Yeah.
Brogheim. Yes.
So since we're splitting between Brandon and Dylan, let's do this. Let's start with the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways in this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, starting with, he stands outside sketchy convenience stores flipping through guns and ammo like a fucking asshole. Which is bad and dangerous.
Gets a gun so teeny that if he had fired it, a little flag saying bang on it probably would have come out at the end instead of an actual bullet.
Except it would be bang in like all lowercase letters with like quotation marks around it. it is, I guess, dangerous to have a gun at home and keep it around and clean it at your table when you're trying to not let people know that you bought it illegally. Dangerous and bad.
He's bad and dangerous to know and makes me mad because whenever he's like, oh yeah, I knew such and so, you don't want to know. Like, I fucking brought it up, didn't I, Scrawn? Tell me what happened.
Yeah. And it's dangerous to almost shoot an intruder in your house. And it's bad to miss if it's Brandon. And speaking of Brandon, let's also do the Moo Moo Parker challenge. 5 ways from this episode, Brandon might have ended up dead. Starting with the most obvious, he broke into someone's house and almost got shot.
A piece from that puzzle could have fallen on his foot, given him a really bad cut, and then he got gangrene and died.
Instead of getting out of his car like a normal person and climbing over the side of it like a goddamn asshole, he could have fallen, given himself a concussion, and bled out on Dillon Street.
Lucinda, while spotting him in return, could have just dropped the entire weight bar thingy on his neck and strolled away.
He could have given himself some kind of embolism lifting those tiny weights himself that traveled to his brain and killed him. That's five.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. As you will recall, when we left off, she was in a relationship with Judd Nelson. So let's continue with with how it went. She was screwing around with him and paying for shit on Dean's credit cards. Judd sidled up to Shannon the minute she set foot on the set and immediately started putting on the hits. You would need a blindfold not to see that Judd has stuck close to Shando's illumination, stealing her limelight to bolster his own lackluster career. Slumming in the made-for-TV movie circuit must have been a real sore spot for him to get all riled up when some people started jeering him and Shannon at a restaurant in Dallas during his location shoot of Blindfold. Though he claimed it was an accident, one of those harassing Judd received his stamp of disapproval. Judd sent a foot to bystander Kim Evans's face right in the nose. The relative ease with which Judd learned to attack in public seems to confuse the age-old adage that you can't teach old dog new tricks. Yet with Shannon as boy trainer, there seems no limit to the violence he may fetch for her. All right with the metaphors, Jesus Christ.
Jeez.
Rumor has it that Judd also has a few tricks he is trying to wean her into with their frequent visits to the L.A. Lesbian Club. A she-bar. End of excerpt, but next time we will hear about secondary contestants, other guys Shannon dated that were not famous enough to get their own sections in the book.
Oh, no foofus. Next time and again with this, two sets of parents' plans for Stuart and Brenda's glorious union backfire. The only thing bigger than the bitch David's being is the three-bedroom jacket he wears to the custody deposition. What's that? You'll find out. And Lucinda's eye roll at Brandon will make America great again. Roll your own eyes at our visual aids on our website at previously.tv, and you can follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. You can follow me on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Tara Ariano, and strangely enough, you can follow her on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our fine feathered producer, David T. Cole, David, is on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.